follow tonight. Mr. Shem. We were skipping around, so we have to be selective. We're in the middle of Perek Chafalef, and we're up to
the start of this year.
We're up to Pasuk Yud Dalet, 14, and the Pasuk says, again, a very well-known Pasuk, Matan b'seiser yichbe'af, v'sheichad b'cheik chama'aza. So literally, Matan b'seiser, giving in private, giving secretly, yichbe'af covers up anger, v'shochad, and a bribe, b'cheik, a bribe in somebody's lap, chama'aza, is strong anger. So the truth of the matter is there's actually a lot of, even grammatically, there's some difficulties, and I don't understand the pasuk. First of all, you'll notice, even initially, there are two different terms for anger that are used in this pasuk. We have af and we have chema. Af and chema, so as the gra always does. The gra is masbir. What is the nafkamina between af and chema? So he explains, af is the initial anger. That's when a person, or Hashem, Kav Yachal, first feels a certain anger, that is called af. And chema, which you might call fury, is when the anger gets manifest in a punishment or the like. So based on that, the first part of the pasuk is much easier to understand. If a person gives tzedakah, and there is a maila in giving tzedakah that a person does it b'seiser, the Gemara says that one of the higher levels, the highest level of tzedakah, is of course when you help somebody get a parnasa, but that's not being discussed here. But within the levels of giving a person charity, if you give charity in a way that the recipient doesn't know who he's getting it from, and optimally you don't even know who you're giving it to, then that's considered to be a very high level of tzedakah, because number one, it ensures that you're not doing it for kavod or recognition, because nobody knows what you've done. And number two, it also avoids the recipient being embarrassed, right? If I walk by in the street and I have to look at the person that gave me money for food, I feel mavoyish, I feel embarrassed, and the like. The Gemara has a story, Taka, I think it was with Rav Zera and his wife, that they used to leave tzedakah for aniyim, bread for aniyim, without them knowing about it. And one time the ani was going to see who it was, so both Rav Zera and his wife ran away and they jumped into an oven that was baking bread. They both jumped into an oven, and Rav Zera's wife was not burnt at all, and Rav Zera's feet were burnt, the soles of his feet were burnt, which means it was still a nace. It was a nace that happened to both of them, but she was a bit more deserving than him. And the Gemara explains, because he would give money for tzedakah, she would give food, etc. She made the food, so that gave her a certain zechus. So because of this, Rabbi Zera, and Zera is kind of a pun, because Zera is a contraction of Rav Zeira. In fact, in the Yerushalmi, he is called Rav Zeira. And Rav Zeira literally means the short one. Now, it's not clear if this was his natural name that happened to be the same word as short or small, or maybe it was a nickname because he was short, but or maybe Saginar, maybe he was tall. But it says that after this incident, he was called Katina Charech Saki, or Shaki, the small man whose thighs were burnt, whose legs were burnt, kind of to commemorate this miracle. But the Gemara says, why were they Moser Nefesh? Why did they put themselves in Sakana? How would they know that a miracle would happen to them? And the answer is, the Gemara brings in the idea, it is better to throw yourself into a fiery furnace rather than embarrass someone. And the Ani would have been embarrassed. And this is the remez, that when you give tzedakah b'seiser, it covers up even the beginning of an anger that Hashem might have on you, for aveiros or whatever it is. Tzedakah is a great mechaper, but the strongest, most powerful kapara of tzedakah is when it is called a matan b'seiser. right? Because it's because you're chas on the kavod of an ani. The Rambam says over and over again, based on these Gemaras, that the dignity of the recipient is even more significant than the financial assistance that the person is giving. Right? You throw an ani money as if you're a piece of garbage. Here, take the money and get out of here. You know, on one hand, you still have the mitzvah of tzedakah. That doesn't get taken away. But on the other hand, it may be counterbalanced by averos in which you don't really come out ahead. You might be in a deficit state spiritually because of the insulting and the bizyonos and everything else that you've done. So that is the idea of matan b'seicha yichbav. Now, shochad b'cheik chema aza. So it depends how you learn. We have, it's interesting, the Gra brings this, and this is actually most important part of this Lafim Shad. You know, we have, in Halacha, we have what are called the 13 Midos of Rabbi Yishmael, right? We have 13 principles by which the written Torah is darshaned to learn out Halacha. So you could say Rishava, Kal Vachomer, etc. These Midos were actually communicated to Moshe, Halacha Moshe Misinai. Rabbi Yishmael was the one who kind of summarized them and explained them a little bit. These are the 13 Midos. Now, there's a whole Arichas and Sifrei Chassidus that the 13 Midos of Rabbi Yishmael also parallel the 13 Midos of Rachamim. It's very, very interesting that, and they try to show how that is. Okay, that's a separate shmuz. But in addition to the 13 Midos of Rabbi Yishmael, we have another brisa, which is a little less known, but it's actually printed at the end of Maseches Brachos. And this is a brisa of Lamed Beis Midos to Rav Yossi Haglili. That Rav Yossi Haglili said in Agadata, and Agadata here basically means explaining psukim if it's not nogea lahalacha, just to explain the history, you know, in a pasuk, or what is the pasuk saying when it's not nogea a halacha or a mitzvah. So he actually said there are 32 midos of how to explain psukim. And they include the 13 of Rabbi Yishmael, yeah. And one of them simply is, again, some of these are common sense. They're not necessarily nimshel l'moshe misinai. They're just the way you read Hebrew. Some of them are grammatical rules of Hebrew. Some of them. So some of them is that sometimes a verb, if you have two clauses in a sentence, and there's a verb that only appears in the first clause, you have to read the verb as if it appears in the second clause. Now, let me show you what that means, because probably what I said probably didn't make any sense to anybody. Let's look at this pasuk, for example. Matan b'seiser yichbe af. Giving in private will cover up anger. So what is the verb in this sentence? Yichbe, will cover up. Second clause, shochad b'cheik, a bribe. Now, there's no verb here. A bribe, strong fury. What does it mean? A bribe in the lap, strong fury. There's no verb. So the mida that the Gra brings, which actually the Medrash uses this pasuk, is that you read it as if it said yichbe twice. Matan b'seiser yichbe af. V'sheichad b'cheik yichbe chema aza. And that's the idea that yuki'ilu, the verb is repeated in the second half of the pasuk. Now, based on that, though, we still have a problem. So what is the second half of the pasuk saying? So let's assume, like the Medrash, that the verb yichbe is going on both the first half of the pasuk and the second half of the pasuk. So the first half of the pasuk is referring to tzedakah. Now, the second half is talking about bribes. So what does that mean? So one way of learning it is that essentially it is reiterating something about stucca in a very powerful way. The Gra rejects this, but the Gra says it as a havamina. And that is, the concept is that Hashem does not take bribes, obviously. Hashem cannot be bribed. In fact, that's another pasuk. Asher lo yikach shocha. As it were, there is one bribe that Hashem does take. And that is, the kindness and the chesed and the tzedakah that you show others works like a bribe, in the sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to give you chesed because of the chesed you show others. So in a sense, according to this, The second half of the pasuk is saying the same thing as the first half, but it's reiterating it in a very strong way. It says, "Matan b'sefer covers up the anger of God," and it is as if it is a bribe. Even though Hashem is lo yikach shochad, but this shochad he takes, and it will stop chema, meaning to say, even if your averus are so much that it's not just enough where Hashem kavyachol is thinking about doing something, but he's actually about to do it. This is a shochad that can stop this. Again, this point is made in Mishlei in a lot of different places. The famous, in fact, we'll see it later in this parak, but you know the famous pasuk that you hear at every levaya because they're collecting money. Stuka tatzil mimavis. Stuka saves even from death. Now, the Gra doesn't like this interpretation because he says Shlomo HaMelech would certainly not use the word shochat legabe HaKadosh Baruch Hu because it would be I understand that spiritually you could say it works like a shochat, but Hashem is described as lo yikach shochat. So we would never describe mitzvos as bribing Hashem. So because of this, the Gra learns a different way. He's still going with the Medrash that Yichpe is going both on the first half of the Pasuk and on the second half of the Pasuk. But it means like this. Matan b'seser. You give tzedakah b'seser. You cancel the af, so nothing bad is going to happen. But if chas v'shalom, you don't give tzedakah, and then bad things happen, there's chema. The government goes after you, the IRS is auditing you, then don't think you saved money by not giving tzedakah. You're going to have to pay bribes to the melech. In other words, shochad refers to the bribes you're actually going to have to pay. In other words, this is the old cheshbon, that a person should not think, if I don't give tzedakah, I'm going to save so much money. No. The money's going to come out one way or the other. You're going to lose it one way or the other. You may lose more one way or the other. That's how he learns. You could have used the tzedakah to be yichbe'af. Instead, you're going to use it to pay your lawyers, pay your accountants, pay bribes, all of these different things. It's like I remember, I see this even with myself. There was a time where I thought I was giving too much for something. So I gave a little less, and then I had to repair my car and had to repair a refrigerator. So a person might think this way. Wow, Baruch Hashem, it's really good that I didn't give the tzedakah because now I have money to repair my car. And so a person might think that justifies the decision. It works exactly the opposite. Had I given the tzedakah, my car wouldn't have broken down. I mean, that's according to the Gra, that's what this pasuk is saying. You could have used the money to do a mitzvah and it would have extinguished the anger. Instead, you're going to wind up paying bribes to human beings because of the predicament that you find yourself in.
The Yiddish phrase, that which doesn't go to the doctor.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. So that's one pshat that he gives. And again, the pshat here is, this is based grammatically on the Lamed Beis Midos of Rav Yossi, that the verb yichbe is going both on the resha of the pasuk and on the seifa of the pasuk. But then he gives a first pshat, which is maybe even more literal, that yichba'af is only going on matan b'seser, and it is not going on sheichad b'cheik. And he says the other way around. He says, in other words, it's making the opposite point, although it's related. And that is, when you give tzedakah b'seser, yichba'af. But if you don't give tzedakah, and you try to be successful by giving money to Basar Vidan, chema, you're going to get Hashem's anger, meaning to say, it's not going to help you. Meaning, instead of yichbe, chema as it means, it's going to hit you. You're not going to escape. That if you're not, right, if you're not in good shape with the Rivanu Shalalam, then trying to buy influence with other people is not really going to help you in any way, right? That's the Gra's preferable pshat. But you understand the grammatical issue is very important, because in Kama Vakama Psukim you will see, in Mishlei especially, but in many Psukim, even in the Torah, sometimes you have to go back. I actually probably didn't do it when I went to middle school. I guess maybe the older folk did this, when we did English, we had to diagram sentences, which is a very, I don't know if they do it anymore, which is a very, very useful subject, verb, predicate. It's useful in English, and it's useful in Lashon HaKodesh, and it's useful in Chumash, as what is the subject of a sentence, what is the verb of the sentence. So you find, when you look at Pesukim, it's not always clear what the verb of the sentence is and what is the subject of the sentence. Hebrew, by the way, is even more difficult than English, because in Hebrew, you often have a subject after a verb. In English, you always have the subject before the verb. Vayomer Hashem. So sometimes it's not clear if the word after the verb is the object or the subject, and sometimes there'll be a machlokus in Meforshim, how to learn those psukim. So diagramming is actually a very worthwhile exercise. But okay.
Any brothers disagree with the use of the braisa here?
Well, you know, this is a mahalach that all Rishonim had, and the Gra continues in that way. That is, when something is not nogeya lahalacha, a mefarish has rishus to explain a pasuk even differently than Chazal, and that is not considered violating Chazal. Chazal themselves give people permission to explain psukim in many, many ways. In fact, this is a very interesting debate. You know, Rashi, of course, you know, Rashi, as we know, didn't have any sons. He had daughters, very learned daughters, and his sons-in-law were talmidei chachamim. But the most famous of Rashi's descendants are his grandchildren, Rabbeinu Tam, Rav Yaakov ben Meir, and Rabbeinu Tam's older brother was Rav Shmuel ben Meir. Well, now that you're all in Baba Basra, you know, you have the pleasure of going through the very difficult Rashbams in Baba Basra. So it's interesting that, you know, on a very superficial level, the very first thing you notice immediately is how much more marich the Rashbam is than Rashi. But not only because he's more marach, but also the Rashbam incorporates what you might call almost a tosfos in the Rashbam. He often asks kashas. In other words, the Rashbam is like a combination of a Rashi and a tosfos at the same time. Now, it's interesting that we also have Perish Rashbam on Arvei Pesachim. But in Arvei Pesachim, you can actually do a controlled experiment because you have both Rashi and the Rashbam. Why the Rashbam wrote in Arvei Pesachim is not clear. In Baba Basra, he wrote because there was no commentary on Rashi. So the Rashbam wrote. Arvei Pesachim, you have a commentary by Rashi. Why the Rashbam wrote is not entirely clear. But there you can actually have a controlled experiment. You can compare on every line of Gemara, Rashi, you know, three words to three lines. That's kind of the ratio on the average. Now, why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up, you'll see indirectly, this is relevant. The Rashbam also wrote a Perish on the Torah, right? If you look at it, Mikros Gedolos, you will see Perish or Rashbam. But there, the Rashbam on the Chumash is very, 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 very different than the Rashbam on the Gemara. The Rashbam on the Gemara is Marich, brings in many, many questions and answers. The Rashbam on the Chumash is very, very Pshat-oriented. Literal, the dicta, like the Ibn Ezra, although it's easier to understand than the Ibn Ezra. And he will often reject Midrashim if they don't fit the more literal reading of the words. Not in Yonim of Halacha, but although there is one, actually, there is one famous Rashbam. This is a mini controversy in the Jewish publication world. There is one famous Rashbam that the Art Scroll Center, and Art Scroll came out with Mikros Gedolos, a new Mikros Gedolos. Also a question why they need that, but okay, they did that. And they reset everything. So people who look for Mumin, Mavakri Mumin, noted that they took something out of the Perish HaRashbam. That is, in Chumash Bereishis, the Rashbam actually interprets the Psukim that the day begins from the morning and not the night. In other words, he learns it. Vahi Erev, that's Mashma the other way. Vahi Erev, Yivoker is Mashma. But he learns Vahi Erev is going at the old day was over in the morning and at night, and Yivoker, that was the beginning of the day. So the Rashbam says he knows this is Keneged Chazal, and he knows that the Halacha, it's not that case, but he wants to learn Peshuto Shal Mikra that way. So the Art Scroll just took it, they just took that out. They just took it out, they said, okay. Whatever, some people are saying, you know, what are you doing? I mean, the Rashbam wrote this. If the Rashbam wrote this, so So you could put a note if you want that this is not la halacha and one cannot rely on this la halacha anyway, but you know, you don't just take it. Okay. But be it as it may, in Parshas I'm trying to remember which Parsha it is. But in Sefer Bereishis, the Rashbam records in which he interprets a pasuk keneged Chazal based on Pshuto Shel Mikra. He has a little bit of a defense. He goes Bereishis to say that we have Rishus to explain Pesukim, and he said he had an argument with his grandfather Rashi, says Rabbeinu Shlomo, why Rashi brings so many midrashim that are sometimes that don't fit the Pshuto Shel Mikra, and he said that his grandfather said to him that if he would have the koach, he would write a new peirush on the Torah that would have fewer midrashim and that would incorporate what he calls pshatos. Although today we use it, usually say pshatim. It says pshatos hamischadshos b'chol yom. We would incorporate the new literal understandings that people have every day. Now, my personal unsubstantiated feeling is that Rashbam was probably arguing with him, and Rashi just wanted to get his inukal off his back a little bit. Perhaps it was that way. He said, why would you do that? I mean, because the emphasis is there are so many reasons why Rashi brings Midrashim. Rashi himself says he only chooses Midrashim that are closest to Pshuto Shel Mikra. But it's also very, very clear that Rashi also chose Midrashim for their Yiras Shemayim, for their Musar, for their spiritual edification, that this was the tachlis of learning Torah, that Rashi chose things that could give you a Yisairus in various ways. It wasn't just to give you a literal interpretation. But the point is, just roundabout, just to answer your question, I'm just showing you that the Rashbam and even Rashi seems to have been modeled that there is a legitimate basis for interpreting Pesukim that way. Okay. Let's see the next pasuk. Again, the Gra has very little on it. Simcha l'tzadik asayis mishpat u'mechita l'payel la'yavin. There is joy to a tzadik when justice occurs. In other words, this is a little bit of a difficult point because mishpat is midas adin. Now, if you remember, when the Mitzrayim were drowning in the Red Sea and the Malachi Yashores wanted to say Shira to Hashem, so the HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the Malachim, Maisa Yadai Tavu Bayam, my creatures are drowning in the sea. V'atem Omrim Shira, you want to sing. How can you be happier? The Rishayim say, although the Gemara doesn't give this reason, that that's why we don't say a whole Hallel on the last day of Pesach, last days of Pesach, because that's Kriyas Yamsuf, Maisi Yadai Tavu Bayam. And yet, there is another pasuk in Mishlei, again, besides this pasuk that we're looking at, that says, Be'ibud Rishayim Rina, when evildoers are destroyed, there is joy. And the answer would be that there is a simultaneous joy and sadness at the same time. There is sadness when life is destroyed, even the life of bad people. Because potentially they could have done tshuva, potentially they could have been good. There is an image of Hashem in every human being that a person might destroy by his actions. But it's a tragedy, right? It's a tragedy when a terrorist, God forbid, commits terror and then gets killed. Although obviously the main tragedy that rips our heart are the innocent people who got killed, especially if they're Acheinu B'nai Israel. But there is a tragedy that the terrorist became a terrorist and the terrorist got killed as well, because he too could have been a righteous guy or whatever it is. There is a tragedy. So on one hand, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying. It's nothing to rejoice about that Rishayim destroyed their lives and had to be destroyed. But at the same time, when Rishus is defeated in the world, that is a Kiddush Shem Shemayim. It shows that God is running the world. It shows that ultimately there's accountability. So the simultaneous hergish of Simcha in Mishpat is not a contradiction to the Maisa Yadai Tovu B'Yam. We're sad and unhappy that it had to come to this. But given the way they behaved, it is a kiddush Shem Shemayim. Because otherwise, if Rosh Hashanah just continued to prosper, in addition to the rishus that's happening, which is bad enough, the suffering, there was also a chilul Hashem. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu says in the Chayit HaEgel. Lama yomru ha-goyim ayei elokeya. The goyim will say, where is God? He has no power. And that's what we always say, asei laman shemecha. We may not deserve it, but laman shemecha, for your name. What does it mean? So that people should see there's a God in the world that punishes evil and rewards good.
So why were the malachim to blame? Shouldn't they be happy for the...
They should be happy, but they were happy in the kind of the personal way. Oh, these bad people are drowning. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling them, you know, again, it doesn't even mean they're to blame. The issue is not to blame. What Chazal are trying to tell us in recounting this discussion is that Hashem is telling the Malachim there is another side to this that you have to look at. It's not to blame. It's that you're looking at one side, there's also another side. And you have to have both of them at the same time. Actually, it was encapsulated very well by Golda Meir, of all people. Again, not a makor of Torah values generally. But she said once, this was a very controversial statement at the time, says, we can forgive the Arabs for killing our children, we cannot forgive them for making us kill their children. Now, the first half of the sentence, I'm not endorsing at all. You don't just forgive... But the second half is also expressing something, that we also have a sadness that we had to kill their children, which the other side does not have in any possible way. So therefore, that's what the pasuk is saying, that tzaddik rejoices when mishpat occurs. And the point is, by the way, he not only rejoices the mishpat on other people, he rejoices on himself as well, because he is makabel all that Hashem gives him with Ava. Right? So you shouldn't just look at the tzaddik as gloating in somebody else's mishpat, but his own mishpat. Because let me tell you a word from Derech Agav about the idea that a world without mishpat, the world needs rachamim, of course, but a world without mishpat would be worse. One couldn't imagine it. Because then Averis would just keep on going and going and going, and there would be no break, because Hashem would forgive everything. There's a word that they say in the name of the Baal Shem Tov. It's a little complicated without a blackboard or whiteboard, but try to see if you can grasp this. It says like this. It says that the Shairish, evil has two physical Shirashim in the world. One comes from the Nachash, which is the snake, and the other comes from the angel Samoil. Actually, we actually don't even pronounce it. We pronounce it the Samach Mem, but it's Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. Right? That's the spiritual kayach of Rishus. It's the same as the Satan and the Malach HaMavis, but he actually has a designated name that we don't even like to say. So of this, now I can't fully explain this. I'm just giving you a Kabbalistic association, but I don't understand the whole association. In Nachash, each concretization of evil has a built-in break, something that stops the evil from spreading. So in the case of Nachash, the evil is the Osches, I'm not sure why, and the break, the thing that stops the evil from spreading, is the Nun and the Shin, which if you reverse the letters, spell shame, a tooth, just like teeth, right? Teeth block the tongue from coming out. They hold back the tongue. In fact, per Lashon Hara, we talk about the teeth as being the machitza that prevents the tongue from coming out too much. So Shin and Nun are the breaks on the ispashtus of evil that would come from the ches. Similarly, in Samach Mem Aleph Lamed, Sam is understood as poison. Aleph Lamed is God's name. So it's God's name that prevents fear of God or whatever it is that prevents the poison from spreading. Now, this is fascinating. If you live in a world that is so degenerate that evil seems to have a free reign, that means you take away the Shin and the Nun from Nachash, and you take away the Aleph and the Lamed from Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. So what are you left with pure evil without anything that stops it? You have the word Chamas. Because Nachash without the Nun and the Shin is Ches. Samach Mem Aleph Lamed without the Aleph Lamed is Samach Mem. Ches Samach Mem, just reverse the Samach Mem, Ches Mem Samach, Chamas. When you live in a world where there's no longer a fear of God, there's no longer the natural conscience that a person has, there is no longer fear of punishment, there's no longer fear of authority. Kimala haaretz chamas. The world is filled with chamas. Hashem's only brera is to destroy. Now, listen to this. This is quite amazing. So what letters did you take away that represent the break on evil? You took away the shin and the nun and the lamed and the aleph. How big was the teva? The teva of Noach was 300 amos long. That's shin. It was 50 amos wide. That's nun. Wow. It was 30 amos high. That's lamed. And it tapered up to an amma and top, which means to say, all the goodness of the world was sucked out of the Nachash and the Samael, and it was concretized into the Ara, the Teva. So the Teva had the Shin and the Nun and the Lamed and the Aleph, and the world was left with Chamas, and Chamas had to be totally, totally destroyed. This is from the Baal Shem Tov. So once again, this is why the tzaddik has simcha when there's mishpat. Because yes, we need rachamim. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself said the world could not be niskayim without rachamim. But it's not true that a world of pure rachamim would be a good world. It wouldn't be a good world. It would be a world of hefkeres, a world of degenerate, a world filled with even more murder and more violence. It would be a world of chamas. And memela, the tzaddik has a simcha. In spite of the fact that we do have the attitude of ma'aseh yadei tavu bayam, which is one side of it, that why did it have to be this way? But the tzaddik has a simcha. Now, mechita l'payel le'oven, again, you can interpret it as too. Mechita means destruction for those who commit sin. So there are two ways of interpreting it. The simple translation is, it's a continuation of Asayis Mishpat. It is a joy to the tzaddik when there is justice and evildoers have their downfall, meaning that's part of the joy to the tzaddik. But the other interpretation is, the Gra suggests, is very, very fascinating. He says the mechita is how they respond to Mishpat. It's not referring to the downfall of a Rasha. A Rasha hates when there is justice in the world, even if it doesn't affect him. Meaning to say, the Rasha has such a hatred for goodness that when there is justice done in the world, it is a mechita, it's a personal defeat for him. You see, meaning the same thing, what is a simcha to the tzaddik, asayis mishpat? That same asayis mishpat is a mechita, meaning it's a source of disturbance. Okay, not that the Mishpat is on the Rasha, but the Rasha, when Mishpat is done, the Rasha hates it, right? Okay. Yeah. Okay, let's see the next pasuk. Again, some of these are going to be short. Adam Taya. Okay, this is, again, a famous pasuk. Again, if you've learned different Gemaras, you may recall. By the way, I'll tell you something. Again, it's a little thing to do when you learn Gemara. Usually, the Chalokim Darshan Psukim from Mishlei are all agadata. Very, 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 very rarely is Mishlei quoted in halachic discussions. So with agadata, half the time we don't even know what the pasuk means. The pasuk, and the Gemara has a drasha, but we don't know what the pasuk means literally. So it is a very, very good idea. And some of the new Gemaras, they have the whole pasuk, but and they even have Rashi in the back. They'll give you Rashi's pasuk. But it's a very, very good idea to look up every pasuk in Agadata and first ask yourself, what does the pasuk mean according to the simple interpretation? And then ask yourself, how are Chazal changing the the simple interpretation of the pasuk, as opposed to kind of skipping it over and not really knowing what the pasuk is saying. So this is a well-known pasuk, and it says, "Adam tayeh miderech haseicha." When a man wanders, a man or a person, Adam is not dafka a man. When a person wanders from the derech haseicha, the way of the intellect. Now, seichel does not refer to IQ throughout the book of Mishlei. But seichel refers to the notion of understanding what is right in life and what is wrong. You could be a brilliant genius, but you're involved in evil things. You are a fool. You are foolish. You're not looking at your purpose in life. You're not looking at Olam Haba. You're not looking at even the short-term consequences of where this behavior gets you. So derech haseichel is the derech in which you understand what life is about, you understand your purpose in the world, and you want to walk on that road. So what happens if a person, because of his taiva, because of his yetzer hara, because of the short-term gain, he is a toa? Again, you understand that the imagery in Mishlei is constant, that life is a derech. Actually, it goes back to the Chumash itself. The Chumash talks about, I have given you two derechim, right? A derech for good and a derech for bad. Right, so we visualize life as a road that has destinations. There are journeys and destinations. And one road will take you to one destination of closeness to Hashem, and another road will take you to another destination. And the mashal is that sometimes the road that takes you to the good destination may externally not look so pleasant. There may be fewer refreshment stands or not so many rest stops. And the other way looks real, real good, but it's going to take you not to such a good place. So, because of this, we wander around. You know, I'm toya miderech haseicho. I wander away from the derech haseicho to go in the other way. So, what is his fate? Well, you're going on that road. Bikahal, you will have a kehila. You will find a good congregation. Not a good. You'll have a kahal. But your kahal will be called kahal rifa'im. Now, the word rifa'im is a bit of an unusual word, actually. Some of the connections are not clear. Rifa'im was a name of a Canaanite nation. They were called rifa'im. But throughout Tehillim and Mishlei, rifa'im are the dead, those who have no life, those who have no olam haba, and those whose lives, even in this world, is dark and worthless and futile. And therefore, this says in a bit of a strong term that this path, when you wander away from the Derech HaSeichel, you will find your final destination with those who are dead. But dead does not just mean those who die, everyone dies, but Rishayim B'chayayim Kriyim Mesim. The Rishayim, even in their lifetime, They're called dead. Now here, the Gra has a fascinating digression, which is really not so necessary for the lashon of the pasuk. But he brings a Gemara in Maseches Brachos to read you the Gemara. Again, it's really a digression, but it's an interesting digression. Kishchala Rabbi Eliezer, Kishchala Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Right, you all know Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, how important he was. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the leader of the Jewish people at the time of the Chorban by Hasheni. He had to make some very difficult decisions when he smuggled himself to the emperor, to Aspasianus, who became the emperor, and the emperor was willing to give him whatever he wanted, and he didn't ask for the Beis HaMikdash, but he asked to spare Yavne and the Chachamim, etc. But when he was on his deathbed, so he began to cry. And his Talmidim said to him, "Why is the Rebbe crying?" So he said the following, "I'm crying because," and he used three examples, "if I would be coming before a melech basar v'dam, hayom kan u'mochar b'kever, he's here today and he's gone tomorrow, I would cry. And now they're bringing me in front of melech malchei amlochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what am I afraid of? Shem Kayas Alai, if God is angry at me, his anger is forever after one dies. If he imprisons me, his imprisonment can be forever. if he kills me, he can kill me forever. And I don't know how to be Mephias. So the Gra explains, you'll notice three things that he mentions he's afraid of. I'm afraid of God's anger. I'm afraid of God's imprisonment. I'm afraid of God's Misa. Because in all of these cases, it potentially could last forever. Anger, imprisonment, Misa. So the Gra says, this is a remes to three Einshim that a person might have after Mea V'Yesrim Shana. The first is Gehenna. A person goes to Gehenna. Now it's true that we do generally say that even Rishon Gemurim, at most, stay in Gehenna Yud Beis Chodesh, but theoretically, there are categories of Rishon that could be there forever. Now, how Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai could assume he was in that category is beyond us, but this was his anova, whatever it would be. So Einish number one is Gehenna. Einish number two, which is actually worse than Gehenna, is you come back as a Gilgal. You come back as a reincarnation, but it will not always be a reincarnation in another human being, but it might be a reincarnation in a chai, in an animal, in a tzomeach, in a vegetable, and in an inanimate rock and the like. So that's called imprisonment. The neshama is imprisoned in physicality. And the third is the real kares, in which there's nothingness. There is just annihilation. There is just annihilation. That's called misa. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is basically saying that three things might happen to me. God's eternal anger of Gehenna. Osreini, the imprisonment of Gilgal. And the third is the misa, the utter annihilation of the neshama, which is nothingness. And that's why he uses three expressions. And the Gra says this trichotomy, if there's probably not such a word, but trichotomy, why not? Quadrichotomy, okay, whatever it is. So he brings a Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara has three members. This is a digression, but it's just a simple pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara is discussing how sometimes, as the Pasuk says, the very hole that we dig to trip others is the hole that we fall into. So the Gemara gives three mamorim of amoraim that illustrate this. Amar Rav Yosef, kapa dechata nagra, the spoon that the carpenter makes. Let's say the carpenter hollows out a piece of wood to make it a spoon, a ladle. The gavan nisrof chardel, that will be the spoon where he'll swallow the burning mustard that'll burn his throat. Meaning, he made the spoon, but if he eats the wrong mustard, his own spoon is going to burn him. That's one mashal. Amar Abaya. Abaya gives another mashal. Sadna besadne Yosef. The carpenter who makes stocks. The stock is that thing that they lock you up in. When he gets arrested for a crime, he will be suffering from the very thing that he made. He will be put into that stockade. Midvil yadei, from the very action of his hands, mishtalem. And Rava says, Gira begere mikto. The archer who shoots arrows is going to be killed by arrows. Maybe not his arrows, but basically what he made is going to be the thing that kills him.
You see by Hillel, Pergamos, on the skull, and he said...
Right, because you drowned someone. Right. So the Gra says, well, what is the use of these three mishalim? So he says very, very, very good. I'll keep shot. These three mishalim are mechuban to the three ancient. The first idea, that the spoon that I dug will have the mustard that burns my throat, is Gehenna, that is described as H. The second idea, that I make the stocks to hold prisoners, and that will imprison me, that refers to Gilgal, which is called an imprisonment. And the third, the arrows that I make may come back to shoot me, that refers to the total Misa. He then says, Derech Agav, a fascinating thing, that Gilgal is called imprisonment because he says, he doesn't bring a mucker for this, he just says that when we make the bracha, Matir Asurim, thank you Hashem, Matir Asurim, who releases the bound, who releases the tide, that's a Shevach V'Hodah, that Hashem will ultimately free our neshamas from Gilgal. and allow us to have our sechar. It's very unusual that we have a bracha for Eilam Haba, but he says it's actually a bracha. He should matir the asurim who are imprisoned in this world, so their neshamos can come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu free of Gilgal. We don't realize Gilgal on one hand, I mean, it's an amazing thing, because on one hand, before a person dies, he very much wants to stay in the world externally. When you're up there and you're given the chance to come back, you'd rather have Gehenna than Gilgal. You'd rather not come back into this world. So the Gra basically says that, again, this is a digression, he just says Kal Rifam Yanuach is the third and worst fate of ultimate annihilation and Misa. That when you're a Tayyam Yiderech HaSeichel, not only can there be Gehenem and Gilgal, but Chas V'Shalom, Kal Refaim, the Refaim is the ultimate annihilation in which there'll be nothing at all. That's the worst of all. Now, I have to mention that sometimes, you know, because the commentary on Mishlei was written mipi Hashmua. These are not the Gra's own words, and it was written at different times and over a number of years. Notes were taken. There's sometimes a lot of inconsistencies because I see Vayteran, the Gra. Right here he mentions three ocean: Gehenim, Gilgal, and ultimate Misa, annihilation. But I see that Vayteran, he brings something which again from Kabbalah. That is called the Kaf Hakela.
Kaf Hakela, what is
that? Right. Well, Kaf Hakela literally means a slingshot, and it's described as you're. It really refers. I mean, spiritually, what it means is that your neshama kind of wanders the earth, and you have no menucha, no sense of menucha. You're not just wander, as if you're a slingshot or a ball in a slingshot. That's cast from one end of the world to the other. And to go ahead, let me show you that pasuk so we can connect it. If you look at pasuk Chaf Gimel, go ahead a little bit, and he says like this: pasuk Chaf Gimel, I'm going to connect it to the ocean, is Shomer Piv Ulashono, he who guards his mouth and his tongue. Shomer mitzaros nafsho is guarding his soul from tzaros, from suffering. Now, this seems to talk about guarding your tongue, right? Shmiras haloshon, not saying lashon hara. But the Gra, as I made, why does it say shomer piv ulashona? Normally, in fact, what do we say shmiras haloshon, right? We don't call it shmiras hapev haloshon. So the Gra wants to say the following, an interesting chiddush, which I don't think most Mepharshim agree with. He says, Shomer Piv u'Lashono are two different things. Lashono is guarding your speech. Piv is guarding your taivus, not indulging in taivus like either eating shuka in taivus achila, or it can also refer through a euphemism to the taiva of znus. So it's two different things. Shomer Piv is a shmira from taiva. Ulashono is Shmira Saloshin. And because of this, why is it Saros? Because he says, like as he says, for Taiva, the Onish is Gehenim. For Lashon Hara, it's Kaf Hakela. So therefore, that's what it's saying. You are Shomer from Taiva and Shomer from Lashon Hara. You'll be protected from the two Saros, Gehenim, connected to Taiva, and Kaf Hakela. Neged Lashon Hara. That's how he ties it up. So I don't know if it's inconsistent, but in the first article that we looked at, we talked about Gehenim, Gilgal, and ultimate Misa, and here he mentions that Gehenim is for Taiva, but for Lashon Hara, it's Kaf Hakela. That's what he says, Kaf Hakela.
What is ultimate Misa? Non-existence?
Yeah, non-existence. Yeah. Again, people ask this question. Okay, I mean, it's a difficult question. I mean,
like you shoot the arrow, the person's dead, gone.
He's gone, that's right. You know, the Gra says, Beferish, that this ultimate annihilation is worse than anything. On the other hand, is there awareness of ultimate annihilation? In other words, the concept is, you're gone. Or is there a concept of awareness that you're gone? You know? And if there's not an awareness, it's hard to define exactly. But at least it's a greater tragedy. In other words, if a person, when he's still aware, is aware that there will come a tikkufa in which there's nothing, so that's a tremendous, tremendous onus. How it's experienced b'shas maisa, that's a bit of a puzzle. Exactly, how do you experience non-existence? Yeah,
the kofa kenach is worse than the current.
He doesn't say no. It's not really. The Gras seems to say annihilation is the absolute worst thing. Because annihilation means nothingness. There'll never be anything. The neshama is destroyed. The neshama is destroyed. There's nothing. There is nothing. Everything else, Kafakela, Gehenim, everything else, Gilgal, everything else eventually ends, and then there's some level of Olam Haba for a person. But this Misa is it.
Why is the Pasuk used Lashon Toah? I think you have to do a little work with the Toah.
I think what he means is like this. I think what he means is that Toya is how that initially a person makes a mistake. He thinks it's not a big deal. But then it becomes Avera. In other words, that's what he's saying. If initially you were Toya, one night stand, whatever it is, eventually you will wind up at Calvary. I mean, he's not saying the initial mistake is going to put you there. But it's going to create a sequence of events, right? Avera, Guerrera, Savera, so it can eventually put you in the worst possible place, right? So that's even a tell you. That's right. That's why one has to be very, very careful. Next pasuk. Now here, Ish Machzor, Ohev Simcha, Ohev Yayin V'Shemen Lo Yashir. So again, as is always the case, we have to look at Pashut Pshat and then see what the deeper meaning is. The Pashut Pshat is that Shlomo HaMelech, again, is talking about the idea that if you want to be a person that has a good time, so Ish Simcha here, see again, it's a little confusing because sometimes Simcha is used in Mishlei as a very positive thing. In fact, we just read in the Pasuk before, Simcha L'Tzadik. David HaMelech says, Ivdu Es Hashem B'Simcha. The Torah says that the punishments of the Teichacha came Asher lo yavadta es Hashem Elokecha b'simcha. So simcha is often, very positive. Here, all the Mefarshim say, it is described in a negative way. It refers to frivolity, having a good time, looking for entertainment. So it says, if you're a person who always lives to have a good time, what's going to happen is, l'fi pshuto ish machzor, you're going to lose a lot of your money, meaning to say you're going to lose a lot of your resources. You're going to lose your health. You're going to lose your money. Meaning, ish machzor o'ev simcha, meaning this is you flip it around. Again, this is the way Hebrew works. Ish machzor o'ev simcha. He who loves a good time is going to be an ish machzor, a person who loses. And similarly, you love good wine and you love fancy oil, lo yashir, you're not going to be rich. And it also means you're not going to be sameach b'chelka. Okay. Now the Gra accepts this as a pshat, but he then offers a very interesting extra idea to this as well. And he says that ish machzor does not just mean he'll get poor, but it means if he creates a frivolous attitude towards life, he lacks Yiras Shamayim. Because why is that called a chisaron? Because we say in benching, and it's actually a pasuk in Tehillim, Yiras Hashem kedayshav, fear Hashem, ki ein machsor, right? The Gra always connects these verbal associations, ein machsor li reyav. Those who fear Hashem have no machsor, they have no lack. So the correlation is this. If you fear Hashem, ein machsor. So an ish machsor is someone who doesn't have yiras Hashem. Right? That's his connection. And therefore, the one that is ohev simcha, he's looking for thrills, looking for fun, is an ish machsor by definition. He doesn't have yira. Now it's true that although David HaMelech said, Ivdu Es Hashem B'Simcha, He also said, Ivtuas Hashem Beira, and he said, Gilu, Bira Azza, rejoice, Bira Azza. So if you only emphasize, now I don't know if the Gra intends this to be an anti-Hasidic comment. It is possible, because indeed these Mefarshim were coming out during the Pulmas against certain aspects of Hasidus that emphasized Simcha. I don't know, you know, it is possible that there's a certain message here that the Simcha in Avodas Hashem also has to be counterbalanced, which is very important indeed, very important, but it needs to be counterbalanced with a sense of Yiras Hashem. And if all you emphasize is the Simcha, even in Avodas Hashem, you're an Ish Machzor, you're a person who is lacking Yira, because Ein Machzor Li Rei Av, right? That's what he says. Now then he says, another interesting shot, what does it mean, he who loves wine and oil shall not become rich? So he says, you know, Pasuk Pshat is, you know, you want luxuries, you know, you're going to get poor. But he says like this, he says that basic Torah, Halacha, Mishnah, Gemara, Torah Shebichsav, Chumash, is called Lechem. We had that a lot. It's called Lechem, bread, the basic nutrition of a person. He says, Agadita and Sod is called Yayin. Although I don't think we had Shemen before, but now he says, Agadita is Yayin v'Shemen, the beautiful adornments of the Torah. So he says, Oev Yayin v'Shemen is the person who doesn't want to learn the basic parts of Torah. He only wants to learn the Agadita and the mysticism of Torah. He shall not become rich, because there is a concept that you fill yourself up with the basic food and then you move on to the wine and to the oil, which is very important. In fact, the Gra was no slouch when it came to Nistar. The Gra talked about Agada and Kabbalah very, very much. And in fact, the Gra writes somewhere in Mishlei, I have to find where it is, that the Geula will come, he says, in the merit of Limud HaTorah. And he says, especially the Limud of Sod, the Limud of Kabbalah.
He was called HaChassid.
He was called HaChassid himself. And the Gra was greater in Kabbalah than his unimaginable greatness in Halacha. That the only Svarim he actually wrote himself was the Bir and Shulchan Aruch, which is from the Gra, and a number of works on Kabbalah. Safra Tznius, portions of the Zohar, that he wrote himself. Everything else, people just copied.
On the Rambam, it's on him?
On the Rambam?
Yeah.
No, in the Frankel Rambam?
Yeah.
No, first of all, that's not even from his Talmidim. All the Frankel Rambam did was, they took from the Shulchan Aruch and they put it on the Rambam, because a lot of the Gra's comments were on the Shulchan Aruch. So that was from the Gra, but he wrote it on the Shulchan Aruch. And the Hagosa, or the Hagosa Gras, the Hagos, which are often not explained, that was the Gras Ksav Yad on the side of the Svarim that he learned. So Olev Yayin V'Shemen is a very contemporary thing, because there are many people, you know, call it New Age spirituality or Neo-Hasidism or whatever you want to call it, who are very, very interested in the spiritual ideas of Judaism on a deep level. They want to do Zohar, they want to do Kabbalah. In fact, this is what everybody says. What do they say? I read an article about which Jewish books people buy. So somebody had a book, they wanted to have it published, and the person said, Soloveitchik, Sex or Mysticism are the only three sellers. These are English books. Basically, that, you know, if your book is not one of those three, you know, if you have Soloveitchik, you know, it's very popular, and the other thing, and the mysticism, you see, you know, no market for it. You know, we're not talking about yeshiva guys, we're talking about the general Jewish book market. So everybody is interested in spirituality, but they often don't want the commitment of keeping mitzvahs and keeping halacha, and even learning the basic things. It's too boring, it's uninteresting, it's uninspiring. But the Gra says that it's certainly true that in Agadita are all the sodos of Torah. But a person has to first have a basic foundation, and then they go on. And he says, Oev Yayin V'Shemen, the person who wants to jump to the Yayin V'Shemen without getting a basic foundation, Lo Yashir, shall not be successful. And indeed, he points out, it also reflects that he's not Sameach B'Chelko, because he wants to go to a Madrega more beyond where he is. And that's always a very dangerous thing. Lo Yashir, he is not, it doesn't just mean he won't become wealthy, but it means he is not wealthy right now. Because by definition, he violates the idea of Sameach B'Chelko. Yeah.
The Rav said that Vilna Gaon held that Mashiach will come through the learning of Torah, but specifically Kabbalah?
Yeah.
Zohar, no?
No, he said Kabbalah, he didn't say
Zohar. Rashbi?
No, he didn't. He said Kabbalah, he didn't say Zohar.
Really,
I mean, Zohar is the Iker Sefer of Kabbalah, right. But yeah, he said Zohar, right. Yeah. He said Kabbalah. Yeah.
Okay,
the
rise of Shabtai Tzvi, is this, I feel like this is helping Shabtai Tzvi.
Obviously that just shows you the danger. What happened with Shabtai Tzvi is that everybody was into Kabbalah. So people who didn't know Chumash, people who didn't know Gemara. So part of the Gra's warning is connected the idea of going to Kabbalah before you're worthy of it, before you know Shas and Poskim or whatever it would be. So yeah, you're right. It's very, very dangerous. The Gra says it will be the Schus that will bring the Geula, but he says it is side by side with that.
Yeah.
He has very, very stern warnings about not jumping into it until one is Roy L'chach. Now, yeah.
You may have this Kabbalah without the Shekhinah, because Ein Shekhinah Shreel Mitoch Dalet Amashal Halacha. So you have the foundation of the Shekhinah with you,
if you know Halacha,
then you can build upon that Sod.
That's right. And that's a good point, meaning Halacha without Sod is deficient, indeed. But it is something. It is a foundation. You have a foundation. You don't have a building. You have a foundation. Sod without halacha is nothing. In other words, you don't have anything. Right, you don't have anything at all, and if anything, it could lead to devastation.
No,
right?
But the thing is that people, once they feel like Kabbalah is connected to Mashiach, so anybody that sort of brings Kabbalah, people just need like a simple message: Kabbalah connected to Mashiach. Therefore, anybody that speaks Kabbalah, all of a sudden they could be lied to think that this is the Mashiach, and they'll go over it. Because the thing is, people, they need a simple message.
No, I understand. I understand. But people in this room are more sophisticated.
No, for sure. But the thing is, the generation that back then, they jumped on board.
Once wanted to find out about Shabtai Tzvi, he couldn't go. So he sent his, I think it was a cousin, sent his son and someone else. They didn't even ask any questions. They walked out. They said, this is a false Mashiach. Why? Because he was lying back like that. He's wonderful. And if the Shekhinah's with him, he shouldn't be lying in such a position like that.
Right,
the halacha, the cover for the Shekhinah, he didn't even know the halacha.
That's right.
Not only this, if somebody would say that Shabtai Tzvi is not good, a person could get hurt. A person could get physically hurt by the people in that time, because they were so pro him.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, listen. In
even nowadays they have that. With
yeah, that's right. No, in
tire slash and crown knights.
No, that's right. In Chabad, people have been physically hurt, including members of the Rebbe's family, whatever it is. I mean, it happens when a person is taken over by a certain idea. They get violent. Yeah. So what I'm saying is Pesha Asar, Pesha Hitra, meaning, in other words, if you're taking what the Vilna Gaon says, you got to take the whole thing. Yeah, the Vilna Gaon says Mashiach comes in the merit of learning Sod. On the other hand, he says here and many other places that one cannot learn Sod until you have a foundation.
Is this also been a reference to the Hasidic movement?
Yes.
And that's why he said, Vilna Gaon said he would have had a chance to see the
Ramchal. That's right. That's
he would have walked to see him because he had so much.
That's right.
All his charts and his
that's
wisdom.
Right.
And
that's right. This is an old speculation people still have. You know, the Gra, wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote a letter to his family, and he left Vilna, and on the way to Eretz Yisrael. And he came back around 6 months later, and no one really knows why didn't he come to Eretz Yisrael. And What's problematical is that they had some evidence that he went to Amsterdam first. Now Amsterdam, from Vilna to Eretz Yisrael, Amsterdam is not the way you go. It's a big detour. And the speculation, and it is a speculation, the Talmidim would say in Ruchnius he didn't go because the Gra was a Gilgal of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the same way, it was Nigzer, Moshe could not go to Eretz Yisrael, it was Nigzer that he could not go. His Talmidim went, his Talmidim were the level Yeshua ben Nun. Talmidei Agra started the different many neighborhoods in Yerushalayim, many minhagim, the Ashkenazic minhagim of Eretz Yisrael. The original ones are largely the Talmidei Agra. All sorts of things, you know. That's why we don't say v'shamru and all the different things. They're a little different than you're used to in an Ashkenazic show. In America, are really because of the minhagi agra and like tefilas geshem before Musa, because the gra was a big person that piyutim are interruptions and everything. You know, say before, say after. And said when it came to Shani Yom Kippur, Lezer HaKalir's was so overpowering that even the gra had to like let a little bit of it in. But okay, but his general shita was, you know, no piyutim.
Amsterdam.
Yeah. So the speculation is that the Gra wanted to come to Eretz Yisrael to bring Mashiach. But in order to bring Mashiach, he wanted to look at the Kesavim of the Ramchal in Kabbalah that he had heard were in Amsterdam. The Ramchal was already dead. And he went to Amsterdam, and we're not sure what happened at that point. Either he saw the Ksavim and thought the door was not Roy Lakach, or he couldn't find the Ksavim and didn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael. But he went back because it says he was looking. Because you know, you have to understand the Ramchal, who was Nifter a short while before the Gra, before the Gra was, they overlapped, but the Ramchal was Nifter when the Gra was young. You have to understand the Ramchal was young, and he taught Kabbalah, and he had a malach, and he had all sorts of visions. And the Ramchal, besides the Svarim that we have many Svarim from the Ramchal. The Ramchal apparently, when he was seized with Ruach HaKodesh, could write tens of thousands of pages. It actually is even a medical condition. It's you can write super fast. There is such a massive. It's described sometimes as a mental condition, but it is a condition where you could just write, like the Shechina was coursing through him. But this was shortly after Shabtai Tzvi, so the Rabbanim in Amsterdam did not look favorably on Kabbalah. And because they thought it could lead to the false messianic ideas. And they ordered him up.
In Italy or in Amsterdam?
No, this is Amsterdam. He was born in Italy, but he was
found
his way in Amsterdam. And they ordered him. They ordered him to stop teaching Kabbalah. And they also ordered him to burn or destroy a lot of his works. So it is recorded that he burned thousands and thousands of pages. But the Gra had heard that there were some manuscripts that he had hidden away to be found by a person that was Roy Lakach. And these were the hidden messianic manuscripts, for which reason the Gra went to Amsterdam, and the Gra would then go to Eretz Israel. And he couldn't, either he didn't find them, or you know, we don't know the whole story of that either. Now the Ramchal himself did come to Eretz Yisrael. I don't know why he left his manuscripts in Amsterdam. The Ramchal did come to Eretz Yisrael. He went and he was Nifter a short while, 2 years after he came here. And that's why he's buried in Tveria, right? The Ramchal is buried next near Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva and the Rambam in the Beis HaKvaris in Tveria. Yeah, disease was a big thing. I mean, the Ramchal died young in Eretz Yisrael. The Arizal died even younger. Moshe Kudavero, the people died. The great Mekubalim tended to die young. Arya Kaplan, who most many think was perhaps a modern Mekubal, also died relatively young. So this is a dangerous thing. Kabbalah is has their warning on it. Okay. Yeah, the next pasuk, Kaifer Latzadik Rasha. A Rasha may be a Kaifer. A Kaifer is a ransom for a Tzadik. And here we have an idea, and of course, this is the opposite of an idea that we have. This idea basically says that sometimes if a Kadosh Baruch Hu was Geyser, that a tzaddik should suffer, Hashem may accept a Rasha in place of a tzaddik, meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decrees something should happen, but he'll pick the unworthy person and be ma'anish. Now, we also find exactly the opposite. That's why it gets confusing, because we do have the concept that a tzaddik can be a kapara for a whole generation. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu can sometimes take a tzaddik and say, you're equal to 1,000,000 people, and therefore the death of the tzaddik will be mechaper. Now, Christianity borrowed that. Christianity borrowed that and talked about Yashka as being an atonement. But the Essam idea that the death of a tzaddik is a kapara for the generation is already in Chazal. And Chazal darshan it from Psukim as well. And they see it in the Torah itself. But here, we have a bit of a reversal of this idea. And that is that sometimes a tzaddik, because of his mazel, right? Mazel is the constellation under which he was born. So the tzaddik may not deserve an onesh. But b'derech ha-teva, this onesh has to come into the world because of the mazel of the tzaddik. But Hashem could switch it, so to speak, meaning to say, it's a mud nezach. On one hand, the mazel is machriach, the onesh, but Hashem, without switching the mazel, so to speak, can divert the onesh to a rasha, and the rasha, as it were, can be the one that is a kofar, kofar meaning a ransom for the tzaddik. Now, then the pasuk goes on, and but as they say, this is the exactly, it's confusing, this is exactly the opposite of the idea that the death of tzaddikim is a kapara, right? Because that works in the other way around. You know, we actually have in a Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, this is a very, very sad story. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was the head of Yeshiva Baranovich. He was one of the Gedolei HaDor. He was the Talmud Muvak of the Chafetz Chaim as well. So he was actually in the United States collecting money. He used to go for long trips, like a year at a time, 2 years at a time sometimes. He was in the United States 1938, 1939, when the Nazis invaded Poland. In September 39, the Nazis invaded Poland. And Hitler had already announced what his plans were. But one thing about Hitler is, you know, what you saw is what you get. He was not secretive about what he planned on doing. And Rabbi Chanan was offered the position to stay in the United States. I think offered him to Rosh Hashiva, other places, he could have stayed in the United States. And he said, using the analogy that many Gedolim used, that the captain of the ship has to be the last person to abandon the ship. He says he has to go back to his yeshiva. Again, one could discuss this even halachically. Are you allowed to be machnas of a makam sakana? But be it as it may, the minhag of Klal Yisrael has always been that you are permitted to endanger your life in order to give chizuk to others. I mean, even though the Rambam...
You are or you're not?
You are. Even though the Rambam seemingly says you're not, but Jewish history has not followed the decision of the Rambam. There are so many cases where people have given their lives for others. Now, there's the Rambam basically says it. The Rambam basically says that anytime you're not obligated to give your life, you are not permitted to give your life. The Rambam says, if a guy goes over to me and says, desecrate Shabbos or I'll kill you, the Rambam says, not only are you permitted to desecrate Shabbos, you are obligated to desecrate Shabbos, and if you let the guy kill you because you don't want to desecrate Shabbos, you are treated as a suicide. That's the Rambam says. The Rambam says, there is no such thing as optionally giving up your life. All I can tell you is that the totality of Jewish history has not followed the Rambam, and we have countless cases of people who gave their lives for other mitzvahs of the Torah, which they didn't have to do al pi din, but they wanted to be Meister Nefesh. You're bringing in halacha. I'm saying even when the halacha says you didn't have to give your life, people, and again, many Rishonim themselves argue with the Rambam, and the halacha, we don't pass on at the Rambam. And Rabbi Chanan,
what other examples are there in the history?
There's some. I'll give you hundreds. I mean, I can't give you every example. It is routine. I mean, unfortunately, Jewish history is a routine story of martyrdom, and over and over and over and over again, Jews gave their lives not to be over on any mitzvah of the Torah. I don't mean when they were sick. When they were sick, generally speaking, not. But in any case of non-Jewish persecution, Jews gave their lives.
He's a Rav Elchanan, could be different than the Rambam because he wasn't necessarily giving his life. He was putting himself in danger.
Yeah, that's correct. He was not going to be killed at the moment. So he went back. He went back to Europe, knowing that he was going back to Hitler's occupied country, Poland. And there's a picture of him on the ship, and he's gazing into the ocean. You can really just imagine what is going through his mind at that point. And anyway, the story goes that, the history of it is that he was rounded up with the other Jews in the Kovna ghetto. Kovna was the major city next to Slobodka, but that's where they were wandering. That's where they were assembled. And there was only one survivor from that massacre, Rabbi Ephraim Ashri, who later came to the United States. And he was able to recount Rabbi Elchanan's last words to the assembled Jews. And Rabbi Elchanan's last words were, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us to be korbanos for our brethren in America. And if we were chosen to be the korbanos and to be the kapara, we have to be careful that our thoughts do not disqualify us from being a korban. That we have to think l'shem shemayim, and that we have to be giving up our lives because this is the ratzon Hashem, and not to question the will of God at this moment. So that's the opposite idea of the misa of the tzaddik is a kapara. But here we have the idea that the rasha is a kaifer for the tzaddik. Now then he mentions, going back to the pasuk, tachas yesharim boged. A boged is a treacherous person. So the place of the yesharim, the upright, can be taken by the boged. So the Gemara points out, you'll notice, first of all, once again, tzaddik, right, versus yesharim, and then rasha versus boged, right? So what is the switch in wording here? So he says, a tzaddik is a tzaddik, mainly bein adam lamakom. A yashar is one who also shows kindness towards others, and he's machapes ways to be meitiv. It's a higher madrega. So he wants to say the following. He wants to say a tzaddik, the korban that takes the place of the suffering of the tzaddik, is one rasha. A tzaddik is equal to one rasha, so to speak. But yesharim are so righteous that even when Hashem diverts the gezeirah, it'll also be done with rachamim, that even the rishayim will be limited. Meaning to say, if you have 10 yesharim and Hashem is going to annul the gezeirah on the yesharim, he will only put it on one rasha instead of 10 rishayim. In other words, that's the malus, that's the mida keneged mida. Because since the yashar does chesed with others and cares about others, so even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the gezeirah off the yasharim, he will not put it on the same number of rishayim, but rather many, the einesh on many yasharim may find its way on only one rasha. See, that's a chesed. Now, you could have looked at it cynically. Oh, that means 100 yesharim are only worth one rasha. No, it's the other way around. The chesed Hashem shows towards yesharim is kolel, the mitigation of punishment that's going to be moved onto the rasha. Now, he doesn't explain boged versus rasha, but I'm assuming symmetrically that a boged, which means a treacherous person, refers to a person who cheats other people, meaning the opposite of a baal chesed.
That's why Shabogev is sheker. Sheker Hadbash is
Shabogev. Okay. Okay, let's do two more psukim. Tov Sheves Bieretz Midbar Me'eshes Midyanim V'kas. All right, this is an idea that Shlomo HaMelech expressed a number of times in Mishlei, kind of the downside of marriage. And he says, better to sit in the desert by yourself with nobody around than a quarrelsome wife and a house that is filled with anger. On one hand, we say, on one hand, lo tov hayos adam levado, it's not good for man to be alone. But better to be alone than to be filled with fighting and anger and quarrelsomeness. And therefore, now this is an interesting implication. I understand how that would be true. Well, again, the question is that 100% true? You know, if you remember the Gemara in Yevamos gives the story that Rav himself had a wife who did not do what he wanted, what he needed.
Sure.
And if he wanted adashim, he wanted lentils, she would make something else, etc. So one time Rav's son switch the order. In other words, Rav wanted something, and the son knew if he would tell his mother this, she would do the opposite. So he did the opposite, and then Rav got what he wanted. So Rav said, how did I get what I wanted here? So he said, the kid must have switched. So he told the child, don't lie. Of course, one might say, maybe the pshat is Rav, okay, in other words, maybe the pshat is Rav would ask, and he'd want the opposite. It could be Rav already factored that in. No, but the simple meaning of the Gemara is that Rav himself wouldn't lie. In other words, Rav himself would not say he wanted something so he'd get the other thing. Rav always said what he wanted because he didn't want to lie, and number two, he wanted to give her a chance to do tshuva. So when she sees, it could have been tshuva, but he asked his son first, and you know, it turned out that he lied. Now,
I would say the opposite. Obviously, this wasn't his intent, but not that it's giving her a chance to do tshuva as much as it's machshil her. Now that every time he makes a request, she's over.
He's meichel.
I'm not sure. I follow. How is the son machshil her?
No. The husband's machshil his wife.
Yeah.
They're asking for something.
Okay.
He's meichel her.
Well, yeah. I mean, but the way Rav is doing it, he's also being machshil. Every time he asks her for something, she does the opposite. So it's not going to help. It's not going to help. I mean,
you should not ask.
He should. Well, I don't know how often he asks, but occasionally he had to ask. Right. So the question that one might raise is, I'm just throwing it out as a question for thought. You know, Ezra Hashem, none of you should ever have to face this. But this is an issue that's very nogel lemaisa today. When you have a marriage, let's say we're chas v'shalom, there's fighting, there's dissension, but there are also children. So the issue that is both a halachic issue and a hashkafa issue and a psychological issue is, are kids better off with a divorce in which they're raised by one parent and they see the other parent sometimes? Or do I say, listen, it's better to have an intact family even with all the machlokas? Now, maybe, obviously, there's not a one single answer. It depends on the kids and it depends on how bad the dissension is. But if you just read the pasuk generally, I mean, the pasuk seems to be saying, better to be alone than to be in a house of quarrelsome and anger. But that's not a raya that's going on the children. Maybe it's going more on the husband himself. And when the Gemara mentions, why didn't Rav divorce his wife? Rav himself gave an answer, that it's enough, shemagadleis esponenu, they raise our children, and they save us from chet by giving us an avenue. For a period of Rivia, not to be mighty Zalavatala or whatever. So you have to know, Taka, because here he seems to indicate better to be alone. But the Gra gives another pshat, that the Gra explains the following. The Gra explains, metaphorically, that the quarrelsome wife is the physical body that you have. On one hand, just as a wife is supposed to be Azer Kinecto, your helpmate in life, so the physical body is the Azer of my neshama. In order for my neshama to learn, to daven, to do mitzvahs, my body needs to physically do these things. My body needs to eat. My body needs to sleep. So in a sense, the guf is the Azer Kinecto of the body that makes it an Isha. Right? Your body is like your wife, so to speak. It helps you. So what is an Ashes Medanim? Just as a woman who constantly argues with everything your husband wants to do, Ashes Medanim is when the guf is constantly arguing with everything your neshama wants to do. Don't get up for davening. Don't learn. Don't do mitzvahs. Don't serve Hashem. So here the Gra says that at that point you have to kind of get a divorce, meaning go to the desert, meaning you have to go mikatsa la katsa. That if you find that the taivas, which are like the taivas, are perceived as this woman that is demanding from me incessantly, I gotta get away from the woman. Now, lamaisa, you can't get away from your body in that literal sense. But you go to the desert, meaning you go mikatsa al katsa, in which you remove yourself from the gashmias of the world. That's what it is. Better to go to the desert than to constantly have this quarrelsome a woman that is attacking you. So in this way, the Gra says, although Lefi Pshito is going on marriage, but it also refers to the fighting that we have between the guf and the guf and the neshama. Okay, one more pasuk. Now, yeah.
So what do you do? Eat less?
It means eat less, sleep less. Again, now there are two things. There are two things the Gra said about tikkun amidos, which superficially are contradictory, but they're not contradictory. One is, the Gra says, based on the Rambam, that if you want to be Misakin Emida, although ideally you have to be in the middle, but in order to get to the middle, you have to go to an extreme, at least for a short time. So let's say you're drinking too much wine, you're an alcoholic, so you have to go cold turkey mamish, and then you could be mamutza, have wine for kiddush, or whatever it is. And the Rambam's famous mashal is a tree. A tree is supposed to grow straight up. It's not supposed to be bent to one side or another. But if a tree branch or a trunk got bent all the way to the other side, in order to get it up to the middle, you need to have a counter pressure all the way there temporarily, and then. So the Rambam says, for example, if a person is selfish, doesn't give enough tzedaka, he should give more tzedaka than he's mechuyev to give, till eventually he overcomes the selfishness and then he can give the right amount. Right? So that's rule number one, that sometimes you have to go to an extreme for a while just to get in the middle. Then there's another thing the Gra says, in which the Gra says, don't try to change yourself instantaneously. Change must take place in small, gradual increments, which means don't go to an extreme. So which is it? Is it go to an extreme or don't go to an extreme? The answer is, you go to the extreme, but you get there slowly and gradually, meaning to say, you wean yourself away from a bad habit a little at a time, because that way you can do it. But your goal, your short-term goal, is to be totally the opposite. And then you can work your way back. So it isn't a contradiction. One is referring to where you want to go, and the other is referring to how long you give yourself. And he's saying you have to give yourself time. That if you want to eradicate the Mida, and you have to go to the extreme too, and stay there for a while. But the way you get to the extreme is by in a short term. Yeah.
I just want to say, what he said about cutting back on sleep or eating, yeah, that can lead to a person achieving a high level of even asceticism. Why not increase the quality of it, so your eating is already ochel chazik is kufi lahodi is tashma. I'm having the protein from these eggs so that I can end up learning better.
Right.
So you're taking away from it as gashmius per se. You're making the gashmius into a vehicle for ruchnius, and then
yeah. No, no, for sure, for sure. And again,
you need 7 to 9 hours.
No, no. Let me point out anyway that the idea of not eating what you need to eat, not sleeping what you need to sleep is not a good idea really for our generation, especially. The Chafetz Chaim himself was very much, but he used to shut off the lights in Radom, etc. And possibly it's because possibly because he himself was very ill when he was younger, that there was a whole year that he did not learn Gemara because his health was damaged by an extreme asmada. So one has to be very, very careful in that. Okay, the last pasuk is Eitzer Nechmad V'Shemen B'Nevechach. Now, here it's interesting. Here, Shemen, again, it's a little muddled to me, because 2 psukim ago, we said, he who loves wine and oil shall not be wealthy. Here we say, Otzer Nechmad, a precious treasure, and Shemen is in the dwelling place of the Chacham. So at least Shemen seems to come in for a good mention here. Uchsil, but a fool, Yivalenu, will swallow it all up and waste it. So the Gemara says the following. Otsar, Nechmad, V'Shemen. There are a number of pshutim that the Gra says. First off, if you want, just apropos of nothing in particular, one of the Iker commentaries on the Kuzari happens to be called Otsar Nechmad, so it's interesting that at least you have the pasuk in which he based the title of his sefer. But anyway, the Gra brings in Medrash that Otsar, the treasure, is the Torah. Nechmad, precious, is Nevi'im, and Shemen is Kesuvim. So what it's saying is, in the dwelling place of the Chacham will be found a mastery of Torah, Nevi'im, and Kesuvim, which already tells you that a true Chacham has to be connected to Tanakh, to know the Torah, Nevi'im, and the Kesuvim. That's in the Nevei Chacham. He then brings another pshat. Otsar is Yiras Hashem. Because there is a pasuk that says, Yiras Hashem, he Otsaro. Yiras Hashem is the treasure house. Otsar is the treasure house. Meaning it is Yiras Hashem that preserves the Torah knowledge that we have. And the Gra says, though, little different than the normal interpretation. The standard interpretation is what I just said. Otsar is the treasure house. But the Gra says, Yiras Hashem is also the treasure. Why is this? Because a treasure is something you hold on to because there's nothing else like it. Yiras Hashem is a quality that is different than everything else in the world. Why? Because Chazal say, Hakol b'dei shamayim. Everything comes from God. Chutz me'yira shamayim. So yira shamayim is called an oitzar because it is a quantity that is literally unique, that there's nothing else like it. So oitzar is yira shamayim. Nechmad is Torah, learning. As it says, ha-nechmadim mi-zahav. It is more beloved than gold, mipaz rav. And that's Otzer Nechmad. And what is Shemen? Shemen is mitzvos. Why is so? Again, let's see how everything fits in. Otzar is Yiras Shemayim, Yiras Hashem, he Otzaro. Nechmad is Torah. Hanechemadim mizahav mipaz rav. Shemen is mitzvah, because what does the pasuk say in Mishlei? Ki ner mitzvah. A mitzvah is a candle. What is the fuel of a candle?
Shemen.
And therefore, the Talmud Chacham, the Chacham, is a person who combines Yiras Shemayim, Limud HaTorah, and Shmiras HaMitzvos. Those are the three foundations of your home. And this is called Nevei Chacham. And the Gra pointed out earlier that the difference between a Nevei and a Bias is a Bias is a permanent home, and a neve is a temporary dwelling. And for a Talmud Chacham, Eilam Hazeh is a neve, it is not a bias. And therefore it is in the neve of the Chacham. But the Chsil Adam, the foolish person, even if he walks into the house of the Talmud Chacham, he will see all of this beautiful stuff and he will simply swallow it up, meaning he'll take it in and it won't affect him. It's like he'll eat it up and it'll do nothing for him. A person could see the greatest things. What does the Gemara say in Brachas? The Gemara says in Brachas that they used to be in Babel a Yarche Kala. Now, Yarche Kala was not like today where people come and learn for a week. Yarche Kala was literally 2 months a year. Imagine this. 2 months a year, Nisan and Tishrei. Right? When the harvest was, before the planting season and after the harvest. Tens of thousands of Jews were mainly farmers in Babel. They would come to the big cities to learn Torah for a month. These are called the Yarche Kala, the months of the Kala, the assembly. And Rava said, Rava, of course, was in the city of Mechuza. And Rava said, the Goyim of Mechuza are very hard-hearted because they see the glory of the Torah 2 months a year and nobody converts. How could they not be affected by the Kedusha? How could the Goyim not be affected by the Kedusha of the Torah? That's what it says. A foolish person, no matter what he sees. I still remember this years and years ago. So I was a little child. That was maybe fourth grade. Rav Schneer Cutler came to Hartford, Connecticut to talk. This is after Rav Aaron was nifter. I probably was older. I went to hear Rav Schneer Cutler. I mean, I didn't understand it. He spoke in Yiddish. I didn't really know Yiddish. But he spoke. And I remember one of my classmates' parents, father was there. A very, very nice man, but a person who was not, from, and he was not educated Jewishly. But again, a very nice man. I don't want to say anything to his discredit, but I still remember this line because it struck me even then as a fourth grader as so like ludicrous. He says something about, look at that man's hands. He never did a day of work in his life or something. So it just illustrates the idea that, you know, you could be in the presence of the Gadol HaDor, but if your involvement and your mind is involved in those physical inyonim, that's how you're going to judge people. Where's his hand? You know, how much physical work did he do? You know, did he ever, you know, dig a ditch or whatever it is? So that's what it says, that in the Nevei Chacham, you could be swallowing everything, taking everything in, and it doesn't affect you at all. It doesn't change you. Okay, well, we'll stop here.